Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's my first time in San Francisco. I'm honoured to be here, and I hope... Can you hear me? Right, okay.
It's okay, you can stand and it will get you.
Just like to confirm, we have no conflicts of interest. Poland is a medium to large EU country of around 40 million inhabitants, area over 300,000 square kilometres. And as a member of the EU since about 2002, Poland is legally obliged to respect EU laws, and amongst the many, this includes GMO regulation. Since the first directive on GMO in 2001, several other key regulations have come into force, which I will briefly go through. And these have all, of course, been incorporated into the Codex of Laws governing each EU state. For market placement, for the market placement of a new GMO in the EU, the most important key players are, of course, the member states' competent authorities, the European Food Safety Authority, or EFSA as it's called, and various EC bodies, mainly the Standing Committee on the Food Chain and Animal Health, the Appeals Committee, together with the Council of Ministers. The aims of GMO regulation are, of course, to ensure safety for human life and health and the environment, whilst also ensuring that the internal market functions effectively. Briefly, this is achieved through conducting appropriate safety assessments, harmonised, efficient and transparent risk assessment, clear labelling for consumers and accurate labelling information in the case of farmers. Now, in summary, up to 2011, there are four basic EU regulations on GMO. The first being the EU directive, which outlines the principles concerning the release of GMO into the environment and also market placement. Then there's regulation 1829, which provides the legal framework in GMO for protecting human life, health and the environment, consumer interests, as well as the smooth running of the internal market. Furthermore, regulation 1830 governs the labelling and traceability of GMO material and products. And lastly, in July 2003, there was a recommendation which provides guidelines on the coexistence of GMO crops with conventional farming and includes measures for avoiding contamination whenever deemed necessary. A recent regulation is the EC 619211 from 2011, which provides harmonised rules for food and feed to be classified as being GMO-free, thus avoiding different interpretations of the EU member states and economic loss of or shortages so arising, especially concerning importers, exporters or farming operators. This new regulation sets a technical zero level of 0.1% for mass fraction, corresponding to the lowest level of GM material that can be validated by official reference methods, also called the MRPL, or minimum required performance limit, because it's rather difficult analytically to measure accurately and precisely nothing. And the following criteria outlined here need to be complied with for GM-free food material. A valid EFSA application for which EU authorisation is pending for more than 3 months. For expired authorisations, still valid safety assessments. For authorised products being phased out. And there should be, obviously, no adverse effects on human health or environment. Also, as well, official methods of analysing must be published and reference materials must be made available. And very, very briefly, this kind of MRPL approach has been used in the regulation of certain veterinary medicines and pesticides in the EU. Now, as I mentioned previously, EFSA is a key player in GMO regulation. I just would like to say a few words about EFSA. This is a large organisation and EU authority and was formed in 2002 in response to food scares and food crises like BSE, foot and mouth disease, that occurred previously in the EU. It principally performs risk assessments using the best available scientific evidence and knowledge. This is to ensure that effective risk management policies and legislation can thereby be formulated by the EC, the European Parliament and Member States. And EFSA's remit covers food and feed safety, nutrition, animal health and welfare, plant protection and health, and this includes the GMO issue in these areas. This slide goes into slightly more detail of EFSA's role, but just to note in terms of GMO material, and the following applies. EFSA performs the evaluation for GMO authorisations. EFSA provides advice on any emergency and food safety requests. And also, EFSA advises on the safeguard clauses, which I'll come to later, which is sometimes invoked by EU member states, something which has been done around 8 times for GMO material, and which I'll describe next. Now, these can be invoked if an EU member state individually considers that an approved GMO poses a risk to human health or the environment. And the EC, of course, is obliged to investigate such cases and can overturn an original registration or request that a country withdraw its temporary restriction. Up to date, in fact, all such safety clauses have, in fact, been rejected by the EC. There's an example here below, but I probably won't go through it because I probably don't have enough time. Yeah? Okay, all right. Well, it's just an example of modified maize in MON 810, and in 2008, 2009, France and Germany were unsuccessful in invoking the safeguard clause due to a lack of clear scientific evidence, and EFSA conclusively showed that all the evidence presented was nothing new. Same thing happened to Greece, and in May 2012, the same product, Poland is now considering placing a ban on this product, as now there appears to be evidence for colony collapse disorder in beekeeping. The case is under investigation, but there does seem to be very clear evidence for this. Now, I'd like to just briefly describe the EU authorisation procedure for GMOs. This needs to be submitted to the appropriate national authority. In Poland, this is the Chief Sanitary Inspectorate, which I represent. And the application must include purpose and scope, relevant data and studies, a monitoring plan, labelling proposal, detection method, and indications of confidential information. So what happens then is the national authority acknowledges receipt within 14 days. The application is sent to EFSA for risk assessment, and EFSA make the submission available to the public. If this is on cultivation, EFSA delegates the environmental risk assessment to a previously designated EU country, which then sends EFSA its eventual report. For GMO market placement, the application is first assessed by the country in which it will first be marketed. And a report is sent within 90 days to EFSA and also any other EU countries that voice an objection. So, from whatever the source, EFSA then performs the risk assessment within 6 months on all the evidence supplied and accumulated and sought. A scientific opinion is then published and submitted to the EC and EU member states, and is also made publicly available, excluding any confidential aspects. 30 days are allowed for receiving comments. And within 3 months of receiving EFSA's opinion, the EC grants or refuses a proposal for authorisation if it differs from EFSA. Reasons must be given. The important conditions are suitable labelling, and authorisations are valid for 10 years, and they can obviously be renewed. Next, however, various expert committees have to approve the EC proposal, and if necessary, an appeal committee may be summoned. And once an agreement is reached, EFSA then adopts its proposal, i.e. granting or rejecting authorisation. Just to mention something about labelling requirements in the EU and comparing it to the States. Essentially, in the EU, all food and feed containing more than 0.9% GMO material must be labelled as such. There is no requirement, however, for labelling animals or their products where they were fed GMO feed. In the USA, I believe, there is a voluntary labelling system, assuming there is no health concerns or major differences compared to respective conventional food counterparts. So, very briefly, turning to some of the observations and controversies arising from GMO authorisations that's happened in the EU and Poland. Firstly, it has to be admitted that the EU has one of the most stringent GMO regulations globally. Up to 2011, 8 member states have invoked safeguard measures to GMO cultivation, and all have been opposed by EFSA, and therefore the EU has asked for their lifting. However, in many cases, the EU Council of Ministers, by majority voting, have rejected this lifting, and this has led to a regulatory gridlock. And as a result, in 2010, the EC allowed EU member states to enforce their own concept of coexistence, where in cultivation, countries may now prohibit certain GMO plants. Thus, legally binding cultivation bans on individual countries can remain in place and are not illegal, as previously deemed by the European Court. The result is, however, this has led to much confusion, loss of integrity, uncertainty, criticism from many places, from member states, industry, farmers, NGOs, and indeed the World Trade Organization. And just to give some examples related to Poland, in 2008, Poland banned certain GMO seeds. This was challenged by the EC, and a case was deferred for 5 years until results from further studies had become available. Fudging and dodging the issue. The MON 810 maize is in process of being banned based on new scientific evidence on harm to bees, as I've mentioned previously. And there is a problem of GMO crop cultivation in Poland because it's totally unregulated and has been called to task by the EC. And many other such problems have occurred in other EU countries, so Poland is in no way a special case or alone. So, briefly summing up, as I said, GMO regulation in the EU is one of the most strictest in the world, and the controversies remain and need to be resolved. Essentially, public opinion in the EU is very, very against any GMO at all, leading to a big dilemma for national governments and the European Commission. And how to balance and reconcile this with scientific evidence which says to the contrary. One must always remember that absence of risk does not exclude new risks that might, for example, be discovered from long-term studies. And finally, according to EFSA, there have as yet been no scientific studies that convincingly demonstrate risk, despite some recent data, for example, on cancer risk in laboratory animals, which were, however, shown to be unreliable. And on that note, I think I've finished. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you.